important.
I like that distinction.
Yeah.
As a literary critic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Have you read The Woman Who Owned the Shadows?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have heard, and looked at it very strongly, that her sister writes as a Chicano.
Could be.
Somebody told me, you know.
What's her sister's name?
Then it finally told me. I was really surprised, you know, when I said, you know, I like what happened to Spectre. And he said, did you know that?
It is, I wouldn't be surprised because of the background that she has. If you take the interview or if you take, where did she put that? Oh, in you know, Joe Bruchac's anthology? There are all these introductions,
yes.
and she wrote her own introduction, yes. And she goes into her background. And it's so mixed, so many cultures, that you could see that one individual in that family may identify and write from that perspective somebody else.
Yeah, but the question is, you know, where do you make the decision? I mean, what culture, you know, should provide your identity? I mean, her sister, you know, designs, you know, for, let's say, for the Indians, you know, and she for the Spanish-speaking part. That's
a personal
decision,
I think.
I mean, Bruchac said, you know, we asked him, he said, I'm half Native and I'm half Slovak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I've decided for this part of my country, you know, which is fair enough.
Yeah. I think that's probably a similar thing. And there's some who refuse to be classified and even self-classify as either or.
Yes.
Do you know Gloria Anzaldúa, Borderlands?
No.
She's a Chicana.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Chicana, lesbian, with a very strong Native background, Indian background. Lived right on the Mexican, on the Texas-Mexican border. She's a fantastic poet and writer, critical writer. And she published this book, Borderlands, La Frontera, The New Mestiza. It's a wonderful book. It goes into all this and she says, my territory is Borderlands, with an S. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to say this or that, it's Borderlands. And there are other people who move along similar lines. If you take Alice Walker's Meridian, where she goes very much into her Cherokee ancestry and combines that with Black experience. Mm-hmm. So that is coming together.
Mm-hmm.
In this introduction that Wolfgang and I will be going to that, we're publishing a book that's coming out a couple of months or so, it's printed already, on minority literatures in North America. It's an anthology. We had a conference on that. And there were papers on Indian literature, but out of the U.S., on Inuit literature from Canada, Métis literature. Mm-hmm. And then a colleague and I tried to put it all together and wrote a long introduction with a lot of bibliographical data and so on. The feeling we had that in a lot of minority literature, I say minority as opposed to mainstream and think of visible minorities, that's Native people but also Chicanas and Blacks and so on,
mm-hmm.
and mainly amongst women. The new thing is that it sort of transcends the categories that we have established and uses this concept of borderlands or Melville Boyd said meridianism, a new kind of position in the world, more holistic approach,
mm-hmm.
and it's coming that way. But it's very difficult for us to put into words. We start the whole thing. We've learned for centuries to dissect what may be really whole
mm-hmm.
and present in linear language what would need a much more complex capacity for abstraction.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult. We'll see. Sorry, I'm talking.
Leslie Silko.
Yes. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
I was waiting for that.
She is not like for everybody, you know.
No.
Lance, for example, doesn't think highly of her.
Yes.
I don't know why.
Lance has very strong stance on a lot of writers. It does not always have to do with their literary work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people all know each other. And they say, oh, that guy, he's such an arrogant fucker, I never
mm-hmm.
want to see him, but he writes wonderful poetry,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa. So I don't know. Yeah, I know. He's also very critical of Scott Momoder.
Mm-hmm.
amongst Indian people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scott. Yeah, that's what I've heard too about Scott Momaday. So.
Scott Momaday seems to be the grand old man. Of
he's the grand old man of course, of, you know, of the modern Native literature.
I think
he's,
you know, No matter what you think of him, you know, but his book has done a lot for Native writers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The fact that it was accepted for a Pulitzer Prize, you know.
And helped make the canon.
And the book is not bad. I mean, no. Really.
But that's all. This all he's ever written, really.
The names.
The names. The Way to Rainy Mountains.
Yes, I know.
He regurgitates the Kiowa migration myth in everything that he does. Regurgitate sounds negative, but he's really elaborating on that again and again.
Yes,
and he hasn't really written something new.
He's exhausted, you know. He's exhausted his potential.
Well, he's an English professor. He's got his
That's right. Teacher. Never become an English professor, because it takes away from your writing.
Yeah. Like, well, you have to be in creative writing, of course. You know, that makes a difference.
Yeah, that's. Mm-hmm. Let's see, who else? I'm trying to think. See, in Canada, there is historically, traditionally, a division between East and West.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same in Indian country. There's the Eastern Indians and mm-hmm. there's the Western Indians. It's beginning to come together just in the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to take a while before we start.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lenore Kishik Tobias
mm-hmm.
is, I think, another important mm-hmm. Native writer in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a man, I met him, he came out and did a reading with Lenore, and I can't remember his name, he's a poet. I think his name is Daniel Moses, and I'm impressed with his work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He read a poem about going to a feast on the West Coast, an Indian feast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right before supper when he read this. And I remember it. I remember it with my mouth.
Oh.
The way he described the food and the juice from the food and just, oh.
Maybe you were just very hungry.
Yeah,
and he selected the right moment.
Yeah.
No, but that sounds cool.
Then there's a woman in Nova Scotia called Rita Jo.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah.
She
mm-hmm.
writes in Mi'kmaq, doesn't she?
And in English.
And in English.
Yeah.
She's got her second volume of poetry out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I bought that, but I haven't read it. It's in the mail to Germany.
I bought the first one a couple of years ago, and it said, you know, that these were poems mainly addressed to children. But they didn't struck me as being very written.
That is the mainstream perception, I guess. Uh-huh. We have the same, you know, Indian stuff is child stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Professors of German in my department, they give me the nickname Indiana books.
Huh? Was hier folgt, ist die Stimme der Zensur.
I was third on the list that was fair enough.
You heard of Basil Johnson?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's very well known, but I think Moose Meat and Wild Rice, I only read 2 or 3 and sort of some through. I'd like his Indian school days. That's very important, about the residential school experience. Yeah. But the stories, I'm not too sure. I can't say anything about it. But
they reminded me of Kinsella.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say that. But it's very hard for me to say that as an outsider. Mm-hmm. It certainly caters to one Indian. I haven't asked you. Okay, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just as I remembered, an up and coming writer is Jordan Wheeler.
Yeah, I heard
from
about
Winnipeg. Him. He's young. He's only about 24, 25. He's been writing full time since he got out of high school.
Uh huh.
And he's good. He's good.
I was going to ask you about another one, and now it's gone. Okay. Oh yes, Thompson Highway.
Thompson Highway, you got to pay attention to Thompson Highway, regardless of what you think of his subject matter. He stands alone as a playwright.
How do you mean he stands alone?
Well, he's the first playwright to have, Indian playwright to have a play that anybody paid any attention to and toured Canada.
He stands alone in the whole of North America as such, because there's no playwrights that have made an impact so far, except him.
I know that a lot of Native women and Indian women are sensitive about the way that he portrays women. But I think he was very brave to do what he did with the Rez sisters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you see that on stage?
I saw it twice.
I saw it on stage once, and I since read it. And when I saw it on stage, I was really impressed. I thought it was a wonderful play. I'd like to see it again, because I heard many things about Nana Push. I wasn't watching Nana Push, I was watching those women. I don't even know what Nana Push did. He was sort of hovering in the background, doing all kinds of movements. But that's obviously very important. And when I read it, then there are the stage instructions. So you, oh yeah, he did that, that's true. I know that women are upset about the portrayal of women. Well, some of them, at least, are. They're not strong, but when I saw it, it didn't come across like that at all.
No, I didn't respond to it.
I thought they were really tough and admirable. I really loved them. Have you read Thompson Highway? Thompson Highway,
no.
The Rez Sisters. It's a wonderful play. I've made.
I'm aware of the title, you know. Is it a review of that?
Yeah. It really made an impact.
Mm.
Maybe he's the most important Canadian playwright as such. Really, really fantastic on stage. I just love it, but Jeanette and Lee were really upset about it. But I think some of the reactions, I was talking to, what's her? She teaches in Regina.
Gail.
No, Peter, her. Sue Derringer?
Deranger,
oui. Thanks. She says Derringer, I think, of people there. Deranger.
Yeah.
She said that first she reacted very positively towards that. Then she heard some criticism about it. Then his second play came out.
Yeah.
And that apparently has been accused as being very sexist and so on. I haven't seen it, so I really know nothing about it. Then she went back to the Rez Sisters and saw the same in them. So maybe
I think
that's a weird approach, I thought.
In Dry Lips, his misogyny is right out in the open. I haven't seen that one. But Shirley Bear was a Canadian artist. She went to it in Toronto when it opened, and she said at one point one of the characters says, in that play, the trickster is a woman,
mm-hmm.
in a very like done up like a whore,
oh, yeah.
and he's always sort of manipulating the men. And at one in one part, one of the male characters says, "Fuck your woman's mm-hmm. power," and she said at that point she cried.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so, it showed his alienation from woman
mm-hmm.
and the power of woman, and that's mm-hmm. what made her very, very sad.
Mm-hmm.
But as a reflection of the reality mm-hmm. of our society,
mm-hmm.
I think that he is reflecting the mm-hmm. misogyny within some Indian men,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. we can't say shut up,
mm-hmm.
don't talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that what the artist does? Is
sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the Red Sisters, I went to him at in the break between Act One and Act Two,
yeah.
and I shook hands with him and I said, "You're a very brave man."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Oh, wait till you see Act Two."
mm-hmm.
Give me time to clear out before the end of the.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you say you felt that way about
it. Huh? I mean, it takes guts
mm-hmm.
to reflect the
yeah, because
our society
you
as it is.
Got flack from inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Native people are very good at that.
Yeah.
I say that, maybe I shouldn't, but at tearing down their people who make an impact and go out there, they often get more flack or just as much more flack from their own community or from other native people than from the outside.
Yeah.
And tear them down. Maybe it's because it goes, I don't know, does it really go against tradition?
No, I don't think so.
Because, I mean, in many nations there were sort of charismatic figures that people...
I was just talking to my dad last night about freedom of speech
mm-hmm.
as a value.
Mm-hmm.
And he said without freedom of speech in our traditional society, we wouldn't have survived.
Mm-hmm.
He says they forget that these days,
mm-hmm.
and they try to stifle the voice.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think, you know, the traditions also constantly change. I mean, the changes were so subtle that some people were not able to see, in particular white observers, you know, who froze Indian traditions at the point of observation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then
mm-hmm.
they thought, well, these traditions are never changing, you know, whereas we are progressing all the time.
And then we ourselves freeze our tradition or attempt to freeze it and attempt to keep it from...
Yes, but this is understandable, you know, you do it out of your of the present situation because
mm-hmm.
you fear, you know, that something essentially gets lost.
Yeah.
So you have to define your tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you try to define a tradition, it's on the point of getting fixed, you know.
It gets
mm-hmm.
petrified,
mm-hmm.
okay.
So I think, you know, we have to be aware, you know, but essentially the inherent dynamics, you know, of
mm-hmm.
these traditions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's what Momide writes about the Kiowas? The Kiowas came onto the plains and they changed their whole outlook on life, you know, simply by acquiring the horse and the plains
mm-hmm.
culture.
Yeah.
So this is the best example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
There's a nice story. Simon Fraser, when he came down with his canoes to the side of the Fraser River, one of the canoes capsized, and this was being watched by a tribe who hadn't been exposed to white people. What they did, I mean, then
mm-hmm.
they eventually they came out of the water. What the tribe did, it integrated or incorporated, you know, this particular story, their own lore. That's fascinating, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamic.
Yes,
this
exactly.
Is a
exactly.
Good example.
And that is something that is often forgotten. Yeah.
Mm.
And it's politically, it's convenient to forget that. Maybe for both sides, or for some people on both sides.
Yeah.
Because then you always have a yardstick.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that to also fix things the way you want them.
So I'm looking forward to your book, you know.
Yeah.
I should get your addresses so I can send you a review copy.
Listen, invoice us.
Okay.
Yes, that's fair, right.
Okay. Quite sure what all they have lined up. I've left it up to them, and I'll just come and they can move me around here and there.
Yes. Mm. Would you be also involved with the Harbourfront series?
I'm supposed to be reading there this spring,
uh-huh.
But I haven't really confirmed it yet. I told them that I would to call me in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
I've been asked to go there several times, but I see one of the things that's very difficult for me is I don't think of myself as a writer. My work is in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Writing is just one of the tools
mm-hmm.
that I use
mm-hmm.
in my work as an organizer. You know, if I think that something else will work better, then I'll,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I'm,
mm-hmm.
it's multimedia kinds of things. I do video, I do film,
mm-hmm.
and I do oral storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't like calling it teaching, but it's facilitating.
Mm-hmm.
And I work a lot with elders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I'm a writer and I'm bopping around all over
mm-hmm.
reading and
mm-hmm.
and talking about the great literature or anything. I'm not I don't think of myself as an authority on. In fact, I get quite embarrassed if I have to speak from the point of view of a writer, because I really don't know what that is.
Did
I know
what
I know what a storyteller is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And a storyteller is a community healer and teacher,
mm-hmm.
which is.
But perhaps that's something, you know, that people at Harbourfront should know too, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But there's lots of work in my community, which is important.
When you say your community, where is that?
Wherever there's Métis people, Native people. I don't make a distinction when I'm working as to which is Indian and which is Métis. But my really hardcore work is within my own community,
mm-hmm.
and that's with Métis people.
Mm-hmm.
We have no money, we have no land base, we have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so those of us who are involved in different things, it's our responsibility to give that back to the community,
mm-hmm.
to help it on its feet. And if anybody else has any money, then they have to pay us.
Mm-hmm.
Never tried these.
That was a big issue. I met with Lee Miracle.
Uh-huh.
She was in Penticton as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I photocopied something from Half Creek, from Indian Rebels for a class. I think did I ever send you a reader a collection of no?
The only thing I ever got from you was the one letter saying you were coming to Canada, and I was going to write to you, and in I was moving papers from the crossing to Saskatoon, and they're somewhere in a pile of stuff, and I haven't been able to find them.
No, it's... I wrote to you about three times. I once sent you a book, too. And they never
People
arrived.
Say that... I'm hard to get hold of. My address has been the same for years. My phone number has been the same.
Mm-hmm.
I have a land out in the country. You probably
yeah,
came by
oh
it.
Oh, yeah.
That that's my
there.
Home.
Mm-hmm.
But my mailing address and everything
is here.
Is with my daughter. I have an apartment in her house, and she's not like me. She's very stable
mm-hmm.
and stays in one place.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so everything comes there.
Mm-hmm.
But people seem to always have lots of addresses and phone numbers. I mean, I don't know where they come from. Anyway.
That's amazing. Howard, I guess, and Martha Gold from Fifth House, they were came up, and Beth Cutten came up with the same number.
Well, Beth has my right number.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. She came up with it.
And the, Fifth House should have it too. Because
yeah, they do. Yeah. They gave me the right number. That's what I was saying.
My publisher in Toronto has my address and my phone number, the same with the publisher in Vancouver. But I am hard to get hold of because I'm traveling all the time. Mm-hmm. My baby is 23, so since my kids left home, I've been... I live out of my suitcase a lot of the time.
Yeah. You say you're not a... You don't see yourself as a writer, but with Half Breed, you really sort of started something.
Well, I'd never written anything before. That was a letter I wrote to myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I understand that.
It was,
And I also understand that large sections of the original manuscript never got published.
Mm-hmm. It was over 2,000 pages long.
Was it?
So part of the decision not to publish all of it was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know anything about writing, and I started out writing everything that was bad in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I finished writing everything that was bad in my life, I thought, good gracious, there must have been something good, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I started to write about my growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the decision to cut a lot of the stuff was good, because it was, it wouldn't help anybody. However, there was a whole section that was taken out of the book that was really important, and I had insisted it stay there, and that was the whole thing with the RCMP. And
Who decided
the decision was made by the publisher without consulting me. And
so
by
you didn't know until it came out?
It was in the galley proofs when I looked at it. And when the book came, it was gone. It was the 100th anniversary of the RCMP that year, and they... The only proof I had to support that if the publisher or myself were sued was my great-grandmother, and she had passed away. So they felt that... But there was a lawsuit that they wouldn't be able to. But they went ahead and did it because they knew I wouldn't agree with it. That whole section makes all of the other stuff make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it puts it into perspective.
Yeah.
And you can almost tell at what point it was pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a
break.
Gap.
Yeah. There's a gap. That's right. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any chance of you ever sort of getting that out? Or getting out a complete version?
Someday I would like to redo the whole.
Mm-hmm.
I said in the book that someday when I was a grandmother I'd write more. Now I'm a grandmother, but I'm not ready to do it yet.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you've got
and
to
then
be like Chichen,
be
become a great-grandmother first.
It's quite possible. My grandson's 15.
Okay. Well, then you'll know. It's time. You know, there's, of course you must be aware, there's a lot of interest in your book in Germany, and students write theses about
Actually,
it.
I don't know, because I never get any feedback. I've never heard from the publisher. I don't know how the book is doing. I've never heard from anybody.
Frauenoffensive in München. I think it's a publisher from Munich, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Frauenoffensive.
Yeah. It's a women's, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I know nothing about... I've never heard anything, and I've never had any fee. You're the only person that's ever contacted me from Germany, other than the lady that came and spent a few days with me one time.
One of my students, she wrote a thesis on your book and Beatrice Gallatin. And she also wrote to you when you came back.
It
must have been
wrong.
I think one was Gabriel's bridge, or Gabriel's crossing.
There's never been an address.
No,
there.
We just tried to sort of locate it on the letter, and if the
post there used to be
a
post office,
smarter,
but it closed
would,
down.
And I don't know which street address she had. But she'll be so excited if I tell her that we actually met. And good. I knew that a little about your activities from Howard and some other native people that I know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very glad you're here right now. And 2 years ago at Medrick McDougall's house, I saw an eagle feather
that
you'd given him.
Mm-hmm. Your medrick was a very
In Germany, there are three couples of eagles left.
Three?
Three couples of eagles left. And they watch day in and day out.
Three couplets?
Three couples
really?
Only. They watch day in and day out. And that's a tiny feather of one of those. And that's very good.
Do you know something? I go to fast very soon. And each time we go to fast, we have to find one of these feathers
well, you've got
to
it.
Take with us. And that's amazing because you never know where they're going to come from. Mm.
Okay.
Thank you.
I've also got something else. You may put it. Want to put it in here. This is a series that I already started. That's the cover is German, but the other stuff is bilingual. Mm-hmm.
And I have no tobacco to give you, but here's a cigarette.
Okay, thank you.
So you can put the tobacco in with the where the eagles dwell.
Okay.
It's like the fur trade.
But that's Joe Bruchac's poetry, you know. Joe Bruchac, he's an Abenaki. He was over in Germany for some readings, and so we published that, and then he was selling it along as he was traveling along. And that's how you can look at it when, if ever you have time.
Oh, I will. I'll read it tonight. Mm-hmm. I do have time when I get home. I do a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm. These are marvelous.
Mm. Yeah, they are. They're wonderful. They're my favorite. I come here often to this place. Mm-hmm. Usually it's very quiet in here.
Mm-hmm.
And when are you going back?
I'll be going back in 2 weeks' time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're staying in Saskatchewan?
No.
Oh, no.
I'm traveling around. I started off in Vancouver, and I went to Victoria. And then I went to Penticton, and then to Regina. And then, I'd applied for a job in Regina with Saskatchewan Indian Federated College. So I could combine that with this research tour. They gave me a grilling and stuff. Anyway, so, and then after 2 days there, Konrad came over and we met at the airport, rented a car, so we're taking 1 week together and we drive around together, split the costs, that makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. What do you do, Konrad?
Huh?
What do you do? Are you living in Canada?
No, I live in Germany. I teach Canadian studies at the University of Kiel.
Mm-hmm. Mm. University of
Kiel.
Kiel.
Near Hamburg. Mm. I've been aware of your work for the last 20 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I studied Canadian literature at the University of British Columbia in 1972 as a
post-doctorate
student, you know, with a couple of courses and mm-hmm. in one course. I heard about you.
Mm-hmm.
This is my first time in Saskatchewan.
In Saskatchewan?
Mm-hmm. I've always been to
I hope you didn't think it was all prairie. Most people think it's all flatland here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I do.
You do?
My dreams have been shattered.
It's a very beautiful province.
Mm. Oh yes, especially up north. Huh?
The prairies are beautiful too, in a very different kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm about 80 miles northwest of Prince Albert.
Mm-hmm.
Is where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
The village isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There were dispersals in the 50s, and our village was one of the villages that were burned down, and we were sent away from there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a road allowance community.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But our church and our graveyard is still there, and we still use them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no people left there anymore, no Métis people.
What happened instead with the plots or the land that the native people had?
The land...
Is it privately owned or what?
It's owned by people that came and bought the land for farming.
Mm-hmm. From the government?
Mm-hmm. And they also built a road in there, and I don't know if you understand what road allowance is.
Oh, yeah. It's the strips of land on either side that are sort of crowded.
But when there's no road, it's quite a large piece.
Oh, yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
when they decide they're going to put roads in, then...
Then
they use that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they sell that to build the road, I guess.
Well, it's set aside to build roads.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would use the land,
oh, yeah.
you know, that wasn't occupied around us, but as the farmers came,
mm-hmm.
we ended up squeezed in that,
mm-hmm.
you know, not very big,
mm-hmm.
but the size of this
mm-hmm.
whole building. And then eventually what they do, if you don't move, is they come... In some parts
of... Who does
of
that? The RCMP?
Usually the priest comes and gets the people ready, and then if the people refuse to leave, then the RCMP come, but they have to get a court order. I've just finished working on a four-part television series. I finished a script, and it's called The Road Allowance People, and it's dramatized, but it's the story of Métis people in Saskatchewan, but I've used one community where this actually happened. And it's a community just outside of Regina,
mm-hmm.
probably about 60 miles, where the priest came, and this was in 1948. The priest came and told the people that they had to move and prepare them for the move. And thank you. And he convinced most of them that they should go because government was giving them a plot of land in Green Lake, Saskatchewan. I don't know if you've heard about the Green Lake farms or the Métis farms in Saskatchewan. There were five farms set aside in Saskatchewan in the 40s, and the people were told it was a land settlement for them.
Oh, yeah. Howard spoke about
Cumberland
that.
House, Ile Crosse, mm-hmm. Green Lake, and Labrette, mm-hmm. I mean in the Labrette area.
Mm-hmm.
So the people believed it. And they were prepared to move.
Mm-hmm.
But what the priest did is convince them that it was going to be their land, all 22 townships of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a train came and picked up, like all of the people, this train came with boxcars, actually cattle cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were loaded up with all of their bags and stuff, their bedding and whatever. And as they were driving away, as the train pulled out, their village was burned behind them, and at that point they realized, because there were people who were politically aware in the community who said this is not true, you know,
mm-hmm.
we should check this out before we go.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the village was burned, they knew that they were taken to Green Lake, or actually to Meadow Lake, about 40 miles from where Green Lake is,
mm-hmm.
because there were no roads during the 40s. They were unloaded off the boxcar. They weren't allowed off the train that whole trip, and there were no facilities for them or anything. And it was November, so it was cold. Some of the people got pneumonia and were really sick. There were some babies died and stuff. When they got to Meadow Lake, they were loaded onto two big trucks. They were taken to Green Lake and they were left there. And they were told that there would be houses there when they arrived. There were no houses, and so a lot of the people lived in tents all winter with their families. There were some people who already had houses there and they shared their log cabins with them. A lot of people got sick and died, you know, but just from flu and pneumonia and stuff. And a lot of them in the spring moved back by wagon back to some of their communities and then tried to rebuild again. But they were really scattered. The community was never back the same again. And so the story, the script that I wrote is based, I use that community, but I use the oral stories of all the people and all of the dispersals and give it to that one community and this in particular one family.
Mm-hmm.
The last dispersal was in 1963 and it was just outside of Yorkton, Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
See, people think that those things, you can't convince Canadian people that these things happen. They don't want to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular Saskatchewan, most people don't even know that history. There was no communications of any kind. mind. And, you know, we didn't have people that were educated. We're quite different from Treaty Indian people in that Indian people have been forced, were forced to go to school. We weren't, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so we, other than a handful of people that we had, and nobody would listen to them because they were considered political agitators. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
And so most people don't know that history. And that's what this four-part series, each part is 2 hours long. And right now I'm working with a producer who's trying to raise some money now. I don't know. It's a very beautiful story. I mean, it's a horrible tragedy, and it's a really ugly story. But the story of the people itself is very beautiful and powerful. It's a story of survival,
mm-hmm.
you know. And no matter what happened, the people never lost. You know, we're never totally. They should have been wasted with that last dispersal in 1963, but they just never. It was sort of our whole history is we've been packing and moving, and everybody is say, oh well, here we go again. And so the story is a very beautiful one.
When you say you are looking for a producer, does it mean that you have also?
We need no.
CBC.
CBC would. Has thought of taking it, but they, when you work with CBC, there's a lot of major changes,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want the changes.
You mean the story?
I want, yeah,
mm-hmm.
because they say, well, you know, it couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody ever believes that things are that bad,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, but I don't know. Times are changing. So I have a producer. What we're looking for are people to invest.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for investors. Because what I would like to happen is that I don't mind the rewrites if it's to make the story stronger,
mm-hmm.
but not to cut key parts of the story out because it might upset somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And it might take a while, but we'll get the money.
Mm-hmm.
I have really good instinct. I have a great belief in the grandmothers,
mm-hmm.
and my intuition has never been wrong. And I feel like this is the one that's going to do it, you know. And I know it'll be okay. It might take us a while, but I know that that will tell the story. I feel that way about books or about projects. I know when this is the right one. Sometimes my head tells me it's the right one. This one tells me it's not. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
But this one is. Mm-hmm. It's both.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll find the people to do it. I also know a lot more about looking for money,
mm-hmm.
more than I did 10 years ago, because I've been involved in film production for the last 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and I know more people, you know, so...
And more people know you?
More people who are, you know, who are courageous filmmakers and, you know, and investors,
mm-hmm.
so I feel like it'll happen. Now, who will air it, I don't know. It's a television. You know, it's a television film. It's not a big screen. And the reason I wanted for television is the video part. I want that to be accessible to the people in the communities. CBC was interested, but and other producers were, you know, wanted it, but they wanted me to do a 90-minute feature. And you can't tell that story in 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you probably could if you wanted to do a commercial film. It's not a commercial film. And
but even commercial films can be quite effective, you know.
Oh, I know. But
they could probably get more publicity than television series. You know?
Yeah, but it's really hard in Canada. Unless you're a great, you can go to Warner Brothers or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Canadian films just don't go nowhere. You know, you might see them in a little theater for two nights and that's it. There's no distribution because the distribution is owned by the big film companies.
But no, this new film by Anne Whedon, I just saw it in
there. Yeah, but she doesn't have the distribution either. Anne has done some really good films. She's a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
She's done some really good films and they end up in the back room. They're shown. You know, but they don't. That we just don't have the kind of a video. You know, where television film has longer life than
mm-hmm.
you know, and has more impact for what I wanted to do, the purpose that I wanted for, than a feature.
Sure.
Not all our people can go to a movie, and there's no movie theaters, but everybody gets videotapes.
You go to St. Louis.
He's got a video library.
Oh, I know.
But there's no cinema anywhere.
Go ahead.
Okay. You start.
Looks wonderful.
It does.
I never thought to ask you if you were vegetarians or not.
No.
You're not?
No.
Okay.
Survive in many places.
Certainly not in the north.
It's marvelous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we had no lunch.
Just one.
I come from a family of people that are involved in film too, so it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, in video and television. My brother, my two brothers,
mm-hmm.
my one adopted brother has been a filmmaker for a long time, who's done features,
mm-hmm.
and I firmly believe I can find money any place that film and books are the way to go. Newspapers are really of vital importance. So mm-hmm. one of the things I'm really excited about the job that I have, I've never have taken it because I'm not,
mm-hmm.
I'm used to freelancing. But everybody reads the newspaper and you can
mm-hmm.
do so many
right.
things with a newspaper. And a newspaper, I'm not thinking in terms of a newspaper like the city papers. We cover the news, but you also can do all of the other things. You can develop writers through that.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Can, you know,
I
really educate and inform
in
people.
Yeah. So you would
and it's
poetry
and it's a place where poetry, creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm doing that. That was never done before in this newspaper,
mm-hmm.
where I'm really putting a big emphasis on creative stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.